Hi, welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. On this week's episode, we have our weekly check-ins. We have our special segment, What I Googled This Week, where we talk V-backs, chicken nuggets, and mind-blowing facts about somersaults. We wrap it up with our BFPs and BFNs. Let's get to it. Hi, welcome to episode 122. Hello, Laura. Are you there? Are you there?
I am still here.
Yay. How's it going? What's going on this week?
So I have a 20-month and four-week-old toddler. And with him, I'll just give a quick update on what's going on. So it got stupid hot again this week, like into the hundreds, which is so freaking annoying. And So we had to stay indoors, but that's meant that we've had a little more time with potty training indoors, and it's going well. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, we're chugging along. He has started to hold his pee a little bit longer, so that's good. Mm-hmm. And he starts to pee immediately when he gets on the potty, which could lead to some aim issues, I have to say. But he definitely understands that. You know what I mean? Like, he's connecting, you pee when you're on the potty, you know? So it's all very encouraging, and, you know, we're just moving on with it and still 100% on the poops. So
that's incredible.
You know, my mom keeps being like, I can't believe that everyone has problems with the poops. So, yeah, I don't know. I can't take credit for it. It's just he's good with his poops, I guess.
He's into it. Yeah.
He's into it. So that's going really well, but we've just kind of had a cooped up week. But I wanted to talk more about my pregnancy this week because I am 21 weeks pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so I'm officially past halfway. And I had my doctor's appointment, just a regularly scheduled appointment today. And everything was normal. Did a little very quick ultrasound. Everything's fine. He's like, bing, bang, boom, everything's fine. And then he was like, do you have any questions? And I was like, no. And then I was like, oh, wait. I do have a question.
Oh, okay.
And the question was what he thought about the possibility of a V-back.
V-back. Interesting. I didn't know you were considering that.
I didn't either. Okay, so so for people who don't know, a V-back is a vaginal birth after cesarean. That's what the VBAC stands for. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's when you've had a previous C-section and then you go on to have a vaginal birth. So I do know that, like, in the past, there was a lot of resistance about VBACs from doctors. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure when, but there were, like, decades where VBACs were, like, basically considered too dangerous to try. And you always had a C-section after you've had a C-section, right? Routine.
Right.
But I think the feelings have changed because there's been a lot of really good evidence that actually VBACs are not as dangerous as everyone thought. There's always a risk of uterine rupture, but also repeat C-sections carry risks as well. So it's one of those things where it's an option for people that maybe it wasn't an option before.
Okay, so why are you considering it now, even though you thought you wouldn't?
Well, I think I've been reading about it. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are so pro VBAC. Like, it's a lot of people are very, very determined to get their VBACs and do everything possible to get their VBACs. And I'm definitely not in that realm. Like, I'm of the, I want to have, like, a healthy mom, healthy baby, good outcome situation, however that needs to happen.
I wonder if a lot of pregnant people who really, really want to have the VBAC maybe wanted to have vaginal birth the first time around and things didn't turn out the way they wanted. And so maybe they want to be able to have that experience a second time around.
I think so. I think for sure there's a lot of people who want to have, like, a birth experience that they imagined and didn't get to have it for whatever reason the first time around. But again, like, people who listen to this podcast know that that's not my jam. Like, I was never a person who had a birth plan. I was never a person who really was emotionally attached to one way or the other. And there's a lot of reasons people want VBACs. There's some evidence that vaginal birth is, like, better for the baby because it helps with their squeeze out, like, the fluid from their lungs. And, like, you've talked about the vaginal seeding and all this stuff. You get benefits from the vaginal birth. So there are a lot of people who want to do it for those reasons. And I totally get that. And I'm, like, more power to you. But it's never been my thing, right? Like, I want a good outcome. But then I started reading and realizing, like, oh, crap. If I have another C-section with this baby, there's going to be like 6 weeks where I'm not supposed to pick up my toddler. Mm. And he is clingy. Like he's a guy who loves snuggles. He loves being picked up. And it's going to be really hard for him to understand that, and hard for me too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing that came to mind. And the fact that we're still in quarantine and probably still will be in quarantine in February when this baby mm-hmm. is born, that anything that allows me to heal quicker in theory will be better, right? So, yes. And I think on average, you heal faster from an uncomplicated vaginal birth than from an uncomplicated C-section, right? Like I had a completely uncomplicated C-section last time, and it's still, you know, I think I was pretty good by about 4 weeks, you know,
mm-hmm.
but that's a long time when you have a toddler.
It is a long time. I went through it, so I mm-hmm. know exactly what you're talking about. And I had a complicated recovery the first time I got a C-section, you know, so that was about, I don't know, 12 weeks of discomfort and dealing with a lot of struggles and hardship. And, you know, if there's any chance of being able to avoid that, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah. You know, Shauna, you just kind of threw that out there that you had a complicated recovery. I don't think we've ever talked about that with your first because we weren't doing the podcast at the time.
Yeah.
But do you want to fill people in on what happened?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't horrible or anything, but it was very uncomfortable. So about a week or two after the C-section, I went to the bathroom one day and noticed, this is so gross, TMI, fast forward if you don't want to hear stuff about my body, my C-section incision was, I thought it was bleeding, right? It was mm-hmm. just like oozing. And I was like, that's not supposed to happen. And it hurt like shit. Yeah. So I called my OB like in the middle of the night and was like, what is going on? You know, I thought everything was wrong. And she had me come in the next day immediately in the morning. And she was like, oh, you developed a seroma. She's like, basically, your C-section incision is infected and it has reopened. So the staple job that I got done in the hospital, I guess, you know, they take the staples out before you go home. So mm-hmm. I didn't like go home with any kind of closure. My skin was supposed to do the rest of it. That didn't work. It became infected and reopened. And right after her appointment, I went to a wound doctor who is also a plastic surgeon. I guess plastic surgeons also take care of wounds. I had no idea. And he had to like pack it with gauze and bandage it up. And he was basically like, I can't re-sew this shut. The best thing for you to do is to just let it heal from the inside. Mm. And so he kept my wound open and I had to go to the wound doctor like twice a week maybe to like clean out and repack my open wound for like, I don't even know, 3 months or something.
It was a long time. I remember because I went with you at least once.
You did? Oh, yeah. I couldn't drive for weeks and weeks. I had begged my friends to take me to these appointments sometimes because Steve was working.
Mm-hmm.
I think you took me at least once. My friend Jordan, her husband Paul took me once because I just, yeah,
Paul's
I couldn't
so
drive.
Sweet.
I know. God, he's so sweet. I just love him. Yeah. So it was tough. I got extra, like 6 extra weeks of disability payments because I just couldn't really work, drive, do anything. And luckily, all I had was a newborn at that point. So I could lift her and that's about it. I couldn't carry her in the car seat. It was hard, but it eventually healed and it was fine. So it was okay.
But that is a perfect example of a thing that would be great to avoid. Mm-hmm. If I could. I mean, I didn't have any of those complicated. My C-section, when I say it was like completely uncomplicated, it was completely uncomplicated. Like in and out, healed perfectly. I have like a little bit of like a keloid scar. So it's like a raised mm-hmm. scar. But that's it. So, you know, and that means I know that a C-section can be uncomplicated. And I'm not against it. I'm not against having another one. So when I brought this up with my doctor, I realized like the first step was finding out if he was even okay with it, right? Because if he was like, no, based on your medical history and whatever, I don't think that's a good idea. It would have been like, okay, case closed. Mm-hmm. But he was like, yeah, you could try. I was like, damn it. Someone make a decision for me.
Oh, no. The decision's in your hands. Yes.
It's the decision's kind of in my body's hands now, because here's what we decided. We're talking with Corey and talking with my doctor and also talking with my friend who's a maternal fetal medicine specialist who, like, she actually persuaded me a little bit because she's been my friend since we were in, I don't know, third grade or something. And I trust her inherently. And she's a extremely well-trained maternal fetal medicine specialist. She's practicing at Stanford now. So, you know, she knows what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And she is super pro VBAC. Like, she thinks that it's a great option for many, many people. And so she was like, I think you should try. She's like, trust me, a uncomplicated vaginal birth is so much better than a C-section. And if you do decide to have a third baby, I was like, I'm not deciding that. She's like, you never know. you know, it's better to have as few C-sections in your past as possible. So that's another. I really don't think we're going to have another baby after this one. But I don't know if you listen to the bonus episode, the Magic 8 Ball said my mother-in-law is going to get a granddaughter at some point. So.
That's right.
But so what I decided with my doctor and Corey was that we should schedule the C-section sometime between like 39 and 40 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he said he wouldn't force me to do it early. Like but he said he likes getting the baby out and in my arms by 39 weeks, because the longer you go into pregnancy, the more complications there are. And potential complications. But he said, like, if I go into labor before that, naturally, or if at, you know, 39 weeks before my C-section, like, my cervix is starting to open and my baby's in a good position, they would try to, like, do what he called, like, a gentle induction.
What's a gentle induction?
Which is, like, breaking my water and putting me on a breast pump.
Breast pump? What? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's that about?
It can stimulate contractions.
Well, why in the heck didn't anyone do that for me the first time around?
That is a really good question. Well, they probably gave you Pitocin, which is like, so what they're trying to do is get your brain to release oxytocin to start your contractions. Mm-hmm. You probably just got Pitocin, which is it's the synthetic form of oxytocin. It's a lot more powerful than putting you on a breast pump.
Okay. So there was nothing gentle about it. But also, my water had already broken several hours earlier.
Oh, yeah. No, the reason that he wouldn't put me on Pitocin is because it does increase the risk of, like, a uterine rupture, I think the more stuff like that you do with having a C-section in the past, the higher your risk of complication trying for a VBAC. So that is the current plan. Just see where we're at and then have the C-section if I get to like 39 and a half weeks or something and nothing's going on.
Okay, so you kind of can still put it off. You can procrastinate your VBAC decision, kind of.
Well, it's not even, I'm not even making a decision, basically. My body decide. Although I have to say, so you know how last pregnancy I had interviewed a bunch of doulas then at the last minute, I was like, I'm going to have a C-section. I shouldn't have a doula. Like, I had a premonition about it. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I had a similar premonition, which is like, I'm going to go into a little bit, like, slightly early labor and have, like, a precipitous labor and just end up having this baby vaginally. I was like, it just came to me and I was like, oh, God. So maybe I should start reading about, like, breathing techniques and stuff.
It would not hurt to be prepared.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not saying I'm psychic. It's just like, it just occurred to me and I was like, well, that is a possibility, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're at. But I wanted to update because I know that there's a lot of people out there who are in my, you know, my situation thinking about a VBAC or maybe not thinking about a VBAC. And that's where we're at. So,
well, at what point will you know if this baby is breech? Because if it is like the last one, you will have pretty much no choice, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the thing.
You're not going to try for a vaginal birth if it's breech.
No, I'm not. Some people do. That's definitely beyond my comfort zone. And also, I don't think my doctor would do that. But as of this week, he is breech.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
But, my doctor said almost all babies are at this point. Like, because they're rolling around a lot. There's a lot of room. So he said that's not a thing to be concerned about because they're almost always breech at this point. However, that's what he said last time.
That's what I was going to say. Didn't he say that last time, but right around the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. And every other time. Well, it's like every what? You go every 4 weeks and then every 2 weeks. And every time it's like, well, baby's still breech, but there's still time to turn. Baby's still breech. There's a little time to turn. The baby's still breech. I don't think there's much time to turn. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It could. That's why I'm trying not to get too emotionally attached to any idea because it's out of my control, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Oh, it's a good attitude to have.
Yeah. Let the universe decide. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that is my a little bit rambling, a little bit long thoughts on my 21 week VBAC discussion mm-hmm. with my doctor. Thank you for listening. But I want to know what's going on with you this week, Shauna. How old is that adorable little toddler of yours? And what have you been up to?
Oh, it's so nice that you called her adorable. She is. That adorable toddler has started saying no. So a couple weeks ago, I was like, she learned the concept of no and was like,
Yeah, right? You were saying her defiance is really kicking in, which is a developmentally appropriate thing, right?
Oh, yes, exactly. So I embrace it. And this week, it's like she finally learned to put together the word no, except she pronounces it wrong.
Oh.
She says mo, M-O. Which is like so funny to me. It's so cute, right? It's like, it's hard though to like giggle at it and think it's cute because a lot of times she's like really insistent and really like determined to express herself and express her disagreement, but she's like, mo. Oh, so of course I've started saying mo instead of no because naturally. That's what you do.
Yeah.
And then it's really cute when she just gets so fired up, right? We know she can get fired up about stuff and scream and everything. So now that passion is translating to actual English words. So like, for example, the other night I was putting Elle to bed and Cece came in and grabbed a book and I wanted to give her a goodnight hug too. So I do one girl's bedtime while Steve does the other and then we alternate. That's our routine. So she was headed in with Steve, and I was like, Cece, can I have a hug? And she said, mo. And she, like, had her book and was walking out of the room, you know, because she found this book she wanted.
Yeah.
And I guess I didn't hear her or whatever. So I'm like, Cece, can I have a hug? And she goes, mo! like the attitude behind it was like, Jesus Christ, Mom, I already said mo. Didn't you hear me?
I already said mo once.
How many times do I have to say mo? Mo! She didn't even look at me. She just like was walking out of the room with her book and just screaming mo behind her. So sassy.
Such a sassy little gal. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She knows what she wants.
Yes, she definitely knows what she doesn't want. But, you know, that's not true either. She's so obsessed with saying mo, aka no, that it's gotten to the point no matter what we ask her, she wants the answer is mo, right? It's like, do you want some milk? Almond milk? Mo. Do you want some juice? Mo. Do you want water? Mo. And then, like, you know, you'll get a juice and she just instantly drinks it. So it's like, of course she wants something juice. She just wants to express the opposite of what we're offering.
Defiance.
Which I also think is developmentally appropriate.
Yeah. She wants to be the master of her domain with mo.
Mo. Oh, my gosh. I know it's going to morph and become no, you know, because that's what toddlers do is they learn the language.
Well, not if you keep repeating mo after.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I can keep her stuck in mo forever. And then like it's just adorable for the rest of her life.
Yeah. It'll be super adorable when she's like at work and they're like, hey, have you finished those TPS reports? Mo. I'll get to them later.
I'm sorry, Cece, what did you say? You finished the reports? Mo!
Get the fuck out of my office. Don't you understand?
Yeah, she'll definitely be able to say fuck, just not mo. Yeah. I mean, no. Oh, so great. And so the other exciting thing this week is that she's finally come around to showing interest in her potty.
Oh.
She was real not into it, you know, very, very hesitant. I was always like, hey, do you want to sit in the potty and see? And she's like,
Mo.
And just, yeah, Mo. And just wouldn't, use it or anything. And this week she discovered Elle's old little potty. Like, we just got her like a cheapy $10 little thing when she was potty training. And Cece discovered it in the garage, and it was like a whole new world. She was like, what is this? And just was sitting on it. It's one of those with a little splash guard, right? So I was trying to avoid that. Because
the penis bump.
Yes, a penis bump. I thought that would be too hard for her. And it it kind of was at first, but she finally sat down on it and let a couple drops of pee out and was very excited. So I think we might be starting to head in that direction.
Look at you. Welcome to my world.
I know. She's really, really motivated by undies. She loves the idea of undies because her big sister wears them.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So that's what got her on the potty the other day. It's like, undies? And I said, oh, well, when you start using the potty, yeah, we can use undies. No problem. And she's like, potty? And ran in. And sat on the potty and like let two drops out. And I was like, good job, good job. And she immediately ran and got the undies.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And yes, she was. I was like, no, we got, you know, you still have to use a pull up. But I put the pull up on and she put the undies on over.
Adorable. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Have you guys been reading that potty book? The Leslie Patricelli? Is that where, who wrote it?
Oh, yeah. She loves it. She loves that last page, the last spread with all the undies.
That's what I was going to say. Like, the very last page is just like, undies.
I love it. Oh, yeah. She loves to point to everyone. And we talk about the pattern on each pair of undies.
Oh, my goodness. See, I'm in the opposite camp because we're in the commando phase, right?
Mm-hmm.
In our second week. And I'm kind of afraid to move on to the undies because I'm afraid it'll make him feel like he has a diaper on. So, but he also doesn't really care about them. Despite my mom pushing them very hard. My mom got a bunch of undies for him and like sent a whole array of them.
Oh,
and every time I talk to her, she's like, so is he in the undies yet? Maybe you should just put him in the undies. He'd like them. He'd be like daddy. And I was like, chill out. We got a good thing going here.
Yeah. Well, yes. And your guy doesn't have an older sibling that's like running around in undies all day, every day to look up to and be obsessed with. So I don't know how long, like when we do the oh crap, I don't know how long Cece's going to let me have her go commando. I'm sure she's going to just want to wear undies immediately. So we'll
also see. I feel like in skirts, it's a little easier, like dresses and skirts.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're in shorts and pants all the time. So it's a little different.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But
that's exciting. So are you guys like setting a date or are you just going to kind of roll into it?
No, definitely going to roll into it because I don't see her enthusiasm quite yet. I still think it's a little hesitant and I just don't want to push her into something she's not ready for.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a little while. But the first steps are there. And the consensus is the more expensive fancy potty that sings to her is of no interest to her. So
good purchase.
Great purchase. At least it doubles as a step stool. So, you know, she stands on it to brush her teeth.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, but Shauna, I think I recall that it hasn't been completely unused.
Uh-huh.
Didn't you admit on Instagram recently that you used the baby potty recently in a pinch?
Oh, why you gotta call me out on that?
Dude, you put it on our Instagram stories.
Oh, yes. It was like my bonus mom confession that week. yes. Okay. So the singing potty has not been unused, I guess. I made it sing. I made the body sing.
Did you feel accomplished?
So accomplished. But the reason was that Cece's been very hesitant about the potties. You know, she's unsure of them, blah, blah, blah. And so like a couple weeks ago, She wanted me to try it. And I was like, well, sure, I'll show her just how darn easy it is and that anyone can do it. And the next thing I knew, I was squatting on the princess potty and made it sing. So there you go.
The things we do for our children.
Yeah, it didn't motivate her. The thing that motivated her was undies.
She was just like, Mom's losing it.
Oh, yeah. Now she, after that, she like tried to get me to go potty on it all the time. She's like, potty? No, 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 no. That was a one and done thing. Now I'm going to use the toilet. Sheesh.
Amazing.
Yes. But that's all the highlights of my week. So I think we should move on to our special segment.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids, but you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why StoryWorth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give StoryWorth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to StoryWorth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted StoryWorth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/BFP.
That's StoryWorth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP. Okay, we are back, and our special segment this week is What I Googled, where we divulge our search history to you. Anything related to parenting, pregnancy, all that jazz, and let's talk about it. Shauna, what is in your search history this week?
This week, I Googled the phrase, turning chicken nuggets into meatballs.
Okay.
Because Al was like, I want spaghetti and meatballs. That's my favorite meal. Mama, will you make me meatballs? And I do make meatballs. Like, I fancy myself a decent meatball maker. But that particular day, I didn't have any ground turkey, no ground beef, nothing on hand. And I'm not really going into stores to shop right now. I'm having my groceries delivered, so it's not like I could just run out and grab some supplies really quick. And also, I want to say spaghetti and meatballs also sounded good to me, right? Like, I don't always make my kids' meals on demand like this.
You're not a short order chef, as they say.
No, absolutely not. No.
Spaghetti and meatballs does sound good. I don't know. Is there ever a time where you're like, eh, I could pass on spaghetti and meatballs?
No. Maybe if I had just eaten a meal of spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah, exactly. Even then, I'd be like, sure, I could do more.
Okay. I'll have it for dessert.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, we have some frozen chicken nuggets. I bet I could somehow form meatballs out of chicken nuggets, throw them in some pasta with some spaghetti sauce, and the kids will never know. But I'm like, maybe I should consult the internet because I'm sure someone's done this before in a pinch. Dude, no one has. At least no one online. There were, like, the first thing that came up was, like, chicken nugget meatball recipe. So I was like, oh, my God, yeah. Perfect. No, the first ingredient is ground chicken. So
I'm of like, course, oh, man. Yeah. It's like copycat chicken nuggets, right?
Exactly. Almost every recipe was basically just for chicken nuggets.
So did you come up with a solution, or was Elle just, like, forever, like, put you on your shit list and, like, she told me I could have spaghetti and meatballs, but all I got was spaghetti, no meatballs.
How dare I?
It's not the same.
It's not the same. Well, listen, Mama delivered, okay? So I took some chicken nuggets, threw them in the microwave, as you do when you're a mom and don't have time to make them crispy in the toaster oven.
If you got an air fryer, that would not be a problem.
I really gotta get an air fryer.
Just saying.
Oh, okay, side tangent. Okay. So I heated them up and I just tried to mush them into balls.
Did you take the breading off or just leave it on?
No.
I guess meatballs have breading, like breadcrumbs in them usually, right?
Yeah. Looking back, what I should have done was mushed all of the chicken nugget meat into like a mixture in a bowl and then formed balls. I bet that would have fooled them, but no, I was like one chicken nugget. I just like pushed it into a ball in my hands. I was slightly disappointed in how they turned out.
just slightly.
Well, they didn't really stay in ball shapes too much. They kind of fell apart, but I threw them in anyway and served them to the kids. I'm like, oh, your spaghetti and meatballs are ready. And she came and looked at it and was like, that's weird. And then she took a bite and she's like, those meatballs are weird.
Oh, no. She knew.
Oh, she knew. She's too dang smart. It's too hard to pull the wool over her eyes. So she just did not eat a single meatball. And I did end up on her poop list. So, oh, well.
Teaches you to try to be inventive and meet your child's needs.
I know. Ugh, how dare I? You know, speaking of cooking on demand, almost every night, like right as I'm about to serve dinner, Elle will look over and be like, oh, can I have mac and cheese tonight? I'm like, girl, if you have a request, you have to put it in earlier in the day.
Yeah.
You can't request that 1 second before dinner. So she is used to not getting what she wants for dinner.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's a good lesson in life.
Right. Yes.
You know, you can't always get what you want, but you get what you need, which might be mashed up chicken nuggets.
So listeners, just if you ever think you want to make a chicken nugget meatball, don't try it like I did. Try a different method and then let me know if it works because I need to know.
Sounds like a plan.
What about you, Laura? What have you Googled recently?
Okay, so this is on theme for my check-in.
Oh, okay.
But what I Googled was curiosity got the better of me and I'm Googling before bedtime after I had discussion with my doctor.
Uh-huh.
And I Googled accidental VBAC stories.
Accidental? Oh, like you would go into labor too early?
Yeah. So I was trying to see if anyone else was ambivalent like me and just kind of fell into having a VBAC. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. I imagine someone who had had a C-section before, but the second time around went into labor, couldn't get to the hospital fast enough, had a VBAC in a taxi.
Basically. Actually, most of them that I found are accidental home VBACs.
Oh, so really?
I will say that most of the stories I found, they were people who wanted to have a VBAC, but they wanted to have them in the hospital. And so the accident part was the home birth. Uh-huh. I was having trouble finding people who, like, maybe it's the wrong search term, but I was having trouble finding people who, like, didn't want to have a VBAC. And then accidentally had one.
Yeah, maybe unexpected would be a better choice because accidental, it's just so funny. Like, oh, oops, I had a VBAC. That was an accident. It sounds kind of funny.
But there is such a thing as precipitous labor.
What is that?
Okay, so precipitous labor is also called rapid labor, and it's defined as giving birth after less than 3 hours of regular contractions. Oof. So it's just like really short labor, right? And I actually know someone this happened to.
Really?
For her second baby, she ended up like giving birth in her bathroom because it was such a fast labor.
Whoa.
You know, it does happen. I don't know exactly how common it is. I mean, it's what you hear about. Like, I gave birth in an elevator. I gave birth in the back of a taxi.
Oh, yeah.
All those stories are precipitous labor usually, unless you're like, I don't think can't speak because I've never experienced true labor at all. Only Braxton Hicks. But from what I understand, it's not like you can really just like ignore labor for 20 hours and then have a baby. Like, you know what's happening, right? So it says that with the, you know, it's giving birth less than 3 hours of regular contractions, and it says by comparison, a regular labor for people who've never given birth before lasts between 3 and 30 hours.
Yeah.
And 3 and 15 in people who have previously delivered a baby. So if you've delivered a baby before, you have a shorter labor on average, I guess. But I don't know if that counts if you've just had a C-section and your body never like went into labor.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I have to say that like I love reading about birth stories, but some of these were not what I wanted to read. Like, thankfully, I only clicked on the ones that I could tell like had a happy outcome. But there was this one story, long story from this woman in New Zealand. And she was, you know, telling her accidental home VBAC story. She wanted to have an actual VBAC in the hospital, but she like didn't get there. And she wasn't saying it was like fun. Like, you know, you hear about these precipitous labor and it sounds kind of like exciting, right? Like, oh, I would love to only have 3 hours of contractions, you know, as opposed to 20 or whatever. But
And they all make it seem like the baby just slips right out, like it's coming down the ski slope or something. Just like, whoosh, and you're done.
Yeah, yeah. No, she made it sound a lot harder than that. And, you know, the baby was fine, but she had, like, pinched nerves and all this stuff. And there were a couple stories like that, which I was like, ooh, I don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. So I think the moral of the story is, like, get to the hospital if you go into labor.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. what I've heard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd be curious if any one of our listeners had sort of an unintentional VBAC, like mm-hmm. where they weren't planning on it, but it ended up happening. I'd love to hear from you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Or maybe even just VBACs in general. Maybe it would mm-hmm. be interesting for you to hear stories from our listeners about their experience.
Yeah, especially if you were ambivalent about it like me, because I know mm-hmm. there's so many people who are like very gung-ho about it. And those stories are out there. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like those stories are really well represented. Like, I want to know about people who feel mixed feelings about it like me, because mm-hmm. I feel like it's not it's almost not cool to talk about how you don't have a strong feeling one way or another. Right. You know, we're all supposed mm-hmm. to be so empowered and owning our birth stories and stuff. And it's like to admit that you're just like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't really care one way or another. It's not like it's a little passe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe that's the new cool. You know, maybe that's the new cool attitude.
Maybe
you're changing the landscape, Laura.
Sure.
We'll go with that.
Am I an influencer now?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, that was my first one I Googled this week. Do you have another one?
I do. On first blush, this one might not seem parenting related, but okay. It is. I'll bring it full circle. Don't worry.
Okay.
What I Googled this week is, can you use a Dyson on artificial grass?
Okay. Good question.
Right?
Dyson vacuum cleaner, I'm assuming.
A vacuum cleaner. Yes. A rather powerful vacuum cleaner. The best vacuum I've ever had, by the way. I'm obsessed with my cordless Dyson.
I do. I have one of those cordless ones too, and I like it a lot.
Yes.
A lot.
So
yes.
Oh, good. So I have artificial grass in the backyard, and I love it. First of all, I just love that we don't have to water it, don't have to mow it. It's always green. It's really mm-hmm. just nice and pretty. And it's hard to clean. You know, we have the gardener come and they blow it and stuff. But they don't come all the time. And then I try to blow it. I have a little electric blower. And it is very difficult to get the little bits, like little seeds and berries that the mm-hmm. trees above drop on it. And so they just like collect inside of the grass.
Yeah, and I can see that being a problem.
Yeah, the kids are curious about them. I've caught Cece trying to eat them before, and yeah. I don't know what kind of berries they are. It's just like, no, 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 no. The dogs are always munching on them. It's like, mm-hmm. oh my God. And I even, like, I have tried a rake to try to, like, rake everything, and that yeah. doesn't really work. Goes through the tines of the rake. And so I just need to know if I can just take my damn vacuum out there, run it on the grass like it's carpet, and clean it up.
So what did you find? I'm like, my instinct is, yeah, like, sure. It's just kind of like plastic carpet, right?
That's what you would think. Like, I probably would have just gone and done it. But for some reason, I was like, maybe I should consult people who know more than I do. Mm-hmm. And it turns out maybe for a one-off, but you really shouldn't do it very often. I was so bummed.
Why?
The reason being, there is something that they do with artificial grass called infill. It sand or dirt or something kind of underneath the fake grass that holds the little grass pieces up and makes it look fluffy and stuff like that. Yeah. So if I take a freaking Dyson out there, I'm not just going to get the berries and stuff. I guess I'll suck up all this infill and ruin my grass.
Shucks. So now are you just like picking them out one by one with your fingers, hands and knees style?
Oh, if only I was that dedicated to the health of my children and dogs. No, I just kind of keep an eye on them and I'm like, no, don't eat those, and rake them away when I can. So it's such a
you
got
to use that iNaturalist app to figure out what they are, so at least you can know whether they're actually poisonous or not.
Oh, right. I completely forgot about that. I only had in mind your Facebook group that was very militant about not asking about things that hadn't already poisoned your kids or something to that effect.
The toxic plant identification group. Yeah. You have to know, ingestion has to have happened. That's ingestion. All. So it has to be like, my dog just ate this or my baby just ate this. You can't be like, I just want to know what this is in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's what the app is for.
Exactly. The iNaturalist app, you can find out what the hell is in your backyard. It's really pretty easy.
Okay, cool. What do I take a picture of? The seeds? Berries?
Well, I would probably take a picture of like the tree. Like the if I would get kind of close up on the tree. You can take multiple pictures. It might take a little figuring out like whether you need to see the leaves of the tree or if there's any berries on the tree.
Uh-huh.
That'd be a good one. Cause I think it's like going off like the shape of the leaf, the shape of the berries, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a little more useful if you had it on the tree or on the bush or whatever it is.
Okay. All right. Well, I am gonna try that and see if I can just let go of my worry about the berries.
If you know they're non-toxic, then you can just be like, well, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eat them.
Yeah, make a
go
salad.
Go crazy. Get some roughage.
Awesome. Well, Laura, do you have one more for us?
I do, but should we take a quick break and then come back and you can hear it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. There's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor. And I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important. And therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, out and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's best sellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
LolaVie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
We're back, and Laura, you have another what I Googled this week for us, yeah?
I do.
Right, let's hear
it.
This
is toddler related. So I Googled how to teach a toddler to do a front roll.
Oh, like a somersault?
Well, I put somersault in, and okay, ready for your mind to be blown, Shauna?
Yeah?
A somersault is not the same as a front roll. A somersault
is... What is a front roll? What are you talking about? Like a roll, flip?
It's like you roll on the ground. Like you put your head down and you do a roll. A somersault, and I did not know this either, apparently is in the air.
What?
Right?
I'm okay, sorry. What even are you talking about? Okay. Getting off the ground, catching air, and flipping?
Yeah, is a somersault. Okay.
Yeah, definitely haven't been doing those my whole life.
Okay, so I had to Google this because I got in this huge argument with my friend group about what a somersault is. And I also thought a somersault was you tuck and you roll forward on the ground, right? That's what a somersault is.
Yeah.
However, upon consulting the internet, I realized that my like whole childhood is a lie because a somersault is an acrobatic movement in which a person turns head over heels in the air. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
According to all these like gymnastics blogs and crap. So apparently we are wrong about it being a somersault. It's a front roll. So I had to Google how to teach a toddler a front roll because I'm not ready for him to jump into the air and do a front flip.
Wow. Okay. Somersault. That's just crazy.
I don't know.
My mind's
blown.
Maybe
our listeners are more in tune with gymnastics, but like I got into a deep dive on this, and this isn't even what I Googled. This was a previous Google, right?
Right.
And it's not toddler related, but I mean, it was like a heated discussion in my friend group WhatsApp. Like we call it Fresno because it's all the friends from Fresno. And it was divided. It was like a group of friends divided about this. But
why? What camp were you in on this issue?
Well, I was in the truth camp. I was a somersault truther because like I also was taught growing up that it was a roll on the ground. But then the internet totally disagrees with me.
All right, front roll, whatever. And I'm not giving up that phrase. I
want to hear from our listeners who did gymnastics whether I'm right or not. I don't need to be right. I'm just saying that this is what the internet has told me, and now it's blowing my mind. Mm-hmm. So anyway, teach a toddler how to do a front roll because my guy is like 90% of the way there just naturally.
Mm-hmm. So is Cece.
He loves going into like downward dog and sticking his head on the ground and putting his palms out beside him. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, I would kind of stop him. And then it occurred to me, like, should I just encourage this? Like, this is gymnastics. It's tumbling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
So I had to look it up. And it is actually something that they say you can encourage. Well, there's a gymnastics blog I found that that shows you how to encourage kids to roll different ages. They say it's good for them because it gives them body awareness, it gives helps them with eye tracking, with bilateral coordination and core strength, and it's just fun. So they have guides for like for children 7 to 14 months old how to do it.
Yeah.
And then they have guides for children 15 months to just over 2 years, which is where my toddler falls in. So I mean, it's basically what you think. You help them get their head down, and then you help them tuck their head, and then you just roll them over on a soft surface.
That's so cool.
So we started doing it, and he freaking loves it. Like, it's so fun. So, yeah, we just have to make sure that the area is clear, because he will full-on try to do it, like, with all his toys in the way and gonna fall.
Knives on the ground.
Knives, yeah, yeah.
Glass.
Our bed of nails.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you always have that bed of nails around. the reason I'm not too surprised that you can teach him this is that we spent so much time doing my gym, especially when Elle was young, and we did do it with Cece for a while. And I remember the first time they were like, okay, we're going to do somersaults or whatever, front rolls with your 6 months old. And I'm just like, excuse me, what? And and they loved it. And so, yeah, we've been doing those for a while. I do have a question, though. Okay. Have you done one since you've become an adult?
I think I have years ago, and it was a mistake.
Big mistake. I cannot do that shit anymore. I tried a few times with Elle, and I was like dizzy. Yeah. So dizzy, so nauseous from doing one front roll.
Yeah, no, I think I tried to do a cartwheel a couple years ago, and I was just like, what the hell was I thinking? I used to do that shit. I used to just be like, cartwheel, cartwheel, here, you know, like, yes. Everywhere. No.
God, I know. I can't do that shit anymore. I just, my sense of balance or something in my inner ear is just like, you're old. Nope, don't do that anymore.
Well, they say that the fluid in your inner ear starts to thicken as you get older.
Oh.
All right. So that's it for me. Should we take a break and come back with our BFPs and BFNs?
Okay. We're back and we have our weekly BFPs and BFNs for you. Laura, you're up first. What do you got for us?
Oh, I have a BFN.
Okay. Tell us. We're here for you. We're listening.
So the BFN is, I've talked about both these things separately about my pregnancy, is that I have really bad heartburn and then I have really bad SPD pain, pubic symphysis pain, symphysis pubis. I've got to get clarity over which ones. It's called SPD pain, but if you like Google it, it's like your pubic symphysis. Anyway, I got crotch pain.
There you go. CP, and, baby.
Yeah, and I have to be really careful about what I do, like how I move, how I sleep, because it'll flare up and make it really hard to walk if I don't. Mm-hmm. But the BFN is that the heartburn and the SPD are like at odds in how I manage them at night. Oh. And it's becoming a problem. So with the heartburn, you know, I want to have my head elevated and I, you know, you're better off if you're sleeping on your side. So theoretically, your left side is better, but because it helps, whatever, it helps with the reflux supposedly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I just find sleeping on my side more comfortable. But the SPD is better if I keep my knees apart as much as possible. And even with a pregnancy pillow between my knees, I find that it's like my knees are too close together and it causes pressure and I start to get pain.
Yeah.
So I'm like tossing and turning because like I'll sleep on my back for the SPD and then I like get reflux. And then I'll like sleep on my side to help with the reflux and my SPD pain comes back. And it's just like, I have to pick my poison and it's driving me freaking nuts and really messing with my sleep. So,
oh, that sounds so hard. Can you take anything for the SPD pain? Tylenol or any kind of anti-inflammatories?
Yeah, you can take Tylenol and, you know, it works okay. I'm trying not to take it all the time because you don't want to take it too much. You kind of want to save it for the worst times, you know? So I'm just trying to take it sparingly. Not to mention that, you know, well, I wouldn't want to take NSAIDs because they're not, you know, they're not indicated for pregnancy. I know that there are some people who end up taking them, like Advil, for, you know, with their doctor's approval because other things aren't working. Mm-hmm. But there's more evidence that Tylenol is safer in pregnancy than Advil, Motrin, that sort of thing. So,
right.
But the other thing is that Advil and Motrin do make stomach problems worse, right? They are irritants. So I wouldn't want to take that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, ugh. It's like one thing clears up, then the other doesn't. And like I've bolted up right in the middle of the night a couple times with my like reflux. I'm starting to like sleep with a trash can next to the bed again because like you just don't know when it's going to happen and it just comes up.
Oh no, you poor thing.
Sucks.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just like, oh, 21 weeks. So just over halfway there.
You still got more to go.
Yeah. So I think the answer is I need to be even more vigilant about how I manage my heartburn, my reflux, like just eating smaller meals and making sure I don't eat before bed. I haven't been, but just no tomatoes. I love tomatoes.
Oh, it's so hard.
It's okay. But anyway,
get through
this is my safe space to vent about it. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a lot of people with a lot worse problems, but that's my BFN for the week.
Is that I hear you. That makes sense.
I've got competing ailments. Mm-hmm. And there's no, well, there is an end in sight, but it's.
It feels far off.
It's like approximately 18 to 20 weeks away. Oh, depending. God. Anywho, I want to hear from you. Do you have a BFP or a BFN?
Oh, I have a BFP.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Painter's tape.
Oh, I fucking love painter's tape. Let's talk about it.
Love it. I am shocked I haven't talked about it before because I use it as a mom constantly. You know, we bought tons of rolls when we were actually doing painting and then had them left over. And I use painter's tape to hang up sheets and blankets to make forts. I use it to hang up the girls' pictures on the walls so it doesn't tear the paint off. I use it to create like streets and arrows on the ground that they can follow and make a parade with their little animals. Just it's endless. It's so handy, so fun. And you know, if the kids get a hold of it, it's fun for them to pull off and play with and stick on things. And it's just such an unexpected thing to have in your parent toolbox that I had to share.
I love it. So I use it for taping down paper that like when we're doing like art projects, you know, like to the table so that he doesn't have to worry about holding it and drawing at the same time, which apparently is a skill he should be learning, but I guess whatever. It's easy to put the painter's tape down.
Yeah.
Actually, I got a tip from a mom. It's not so applicable now that we're not really flying places, but I had heard that if you have like a 12-month-old or, you know, something like early toddler and you're on a flight, bring a roll of painter's tape with you and just like tape it to the tray in front of you and like let them just peel it off. Like basically it just like is an activity for them. And it totally is. I've done that. I've like put it on the walls and he'll just like take it off and put it on. And
oh man, that's great.
Oh, you can also use it to like mask out parts of a drawing, right? So that you can, or like painting. So like the other day I masked out a little heart and then he painted and then we peeled the heart off and it, you know, he had a little design.
That's a great idea. That reminds me of what we did recently. I'd seen this on Instagram or Pinterest or whatever ever since the quarantine started. Something people were doing in their backyards was on their block walls, taking painter's tape and making like a big rectangle with, you know, crisscrossing pieces of long painter's tape and then taking chalk and coloring in all the exposed wall, and then you remove all the pieces of tape and you have this really cool geometric design left. And Elle and I did that recently and I love it. It's so pretty and cute and it's all because I'm a painter's tape.
I love that painter's tape. Mm-hmm. Anyway, hot tips.
Hot tips, you guys. If you have any hot tips for us, you know we want to hear them. Please reach out. Laura, where can they reach us?
We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BFP Podcast. We also have a website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com. If you want to send us an email, you can include a voice memo in that email to contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com. Finally, join our Facebook community group. Just search Big Fat Positive Community in Facebook. It's a closed private group, so request to join. If you answer the 2 questions, you'll get sent right through to all the awesome stuff that's getting discussed in there.
And if you love our show, please rate and review it wherever you listen. That's so helpful. Other people look at those reviews and think, gosh, that sounds like a great podcast. I'm going to give it a try. And we always love expanding our BFP family. And if you love the show, let your friends know about BFP. Our show is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.